This is Jerry Pippin, and we are in Roswell, New Mexico, for the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. Ann Robinson is with us. A Hollywood product all the way. You even went to Hollywood High School, huh, Ann?
Certainly did. Born in Hollywood, born in the Hollywood Hospital, went to Hollywood High School. My father worked on the corner of Hollywood and Vine in the Bank of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, I remember when that was there years ago.
The Equitable Building.
Yeah, anyway, what brings you to Roswell? You've made a few movies, and one of them's pretty famous for Alien Contact.
Yeah, I guess I was the first woman ever touched by an alien in a motion picture.
And how did it feel?
Well, I couldn't feel it, quite frankly. It was such a gentle touch.
Oh, okay.
Such a gentle touch. I had to be told when to look frightened. War of the Worlds was quite a popular movie, and it's lasted 50 years.
Yes, it was. Incredible.
And people are still eager to talk to me about it and complimenting me on the movie, and I'm very grateful to be an ambassadrix for Paramount Studio and George Pal, and now for Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. You know, the original, it seems to me, of course, the radio show originally with Orson Welles, then they made the movie, the one with Pal. I mean, that was really high technology back there in the 50s, what he did with all of that.
And without a computer.
And yeah, it was amazing.
All done by hand, all done by talent, by love.
If somebody gets a chance to, I guess it's out on a DVD.
Oh, my God, yes. You could get it right at my table if you're interested.
I absolutely thought that might
You just
happen.
Come over to my table tomorrow. I've got a whole
gaggle. Not only is she a great Hollywood personality, she's a great plugger.
Well, Paramount's very happy that people are so grateful.
We're talking about the UFO Museum. And you have a table there, and you're there. You'll be there all day Sunday, right?
Yes, I will be. Oh, I've enjoyed it so much. Other people have been just priceless, just precious people.
But tell me a little bit about what's been happening over there. You've been there since the 4th?
Yes, we arrived.
Yeah,
we set up all our. We left Los Angeles a little in afternoon on Monday.
Okay.
And
It's not easy to get to Roswell.
Well, but it's a lovely drive, really.
Yeah, right.
Gosh, I'm living in the United States of America. I want to see it.
Yeah.
I don't want to fly over it.
Well, we drove here, too. I feel the same way about it.
Absolutely. I love trains. I love cars.
Well, great.
It's 35,000 feet that upsets me.
Yeah. I miss those trains from years ago, that like the San Francisco Chief and things like
Lord,
that.
Oh, Lord, yes. My daddy used to go up on the Lark.
Yeah.
At night, we used to see him off at the Glendale Station. He'd go up on the Lark.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some pretty neat times about that. What do you think about the two changes of the script with Spielberg's version? I mean, I don't remember in the original War of the Worlds that the... They were basically eating people.
Well, actually,
I guess they did
Spielberg,
make them...
Steven Spielberg is actually what H.G. Wells wrote.
Right.
So he's a lot closer to the actual factual book than George Pal was. Well, we were quieter, more innocent people in the 50s. I don't think we could have put up with the detail that Spielberg... In his movie. No, I don't think... Although, you know, George Pal wanted to make his machines walk, but it was too costly. You know, he was very famous for his puppetoons. And that, you know, the stop-action motion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He and Ray Harryhausen. But Paramount didn't want it. It was too costly and too much trouble. So they came up with those brilliant Stingray flying machines.
Yeah, right. It was
and
neat
with that Cobra hood, which actually came... The idea came from Jack Center, who was one of the... the fellow did all the models for the show. It came from a Zenith record player. He said there was something very mysterious the way this record that covered the needle.
You're talking about back there with the record changer and the needle would come over.
Yes, and the needle, the way the arm would slide back and forth, and it was covered by a hooded cobra. And he said, so that thing's modeled after a Zenith record player.
Well, that's an interesting little sidelight. See, folks, it pays to listen to the show. We got inside information
Absolutely.
Here. Absolutely. At the UFO Museum, you've been here for a while now. You've met a lot of people. They come up. They tell you all kinds of stories and experiences, I'm sure.
Oh, the highlight today, I met Jack Trowbridge.
Uh-huh. Jack was on our show.
Oh, Lord, I couldn't believe his stories. The man was there.
Yes, he was.
He's going to be 90?
Yeah, 89 now, I guess.
Yes, incredible person. His stories just left you with your mouth hanging open. My goodness.
Yeah, we had Jack on our show this morning.
Oh, Lord, a real honest-to-goodness witness.
What do you pick up at the UFO Museum? You know, Walter Haut was one of the founders of that. This affidavit has just been released. We had Tom and Don on recently about their new book. What do you make of all of this?
Well, all of this really is quite new to me because I'm now among a bunch of, you know, eggheads. I'm talking to intelligent people who are educated and interesting and write books, and they're authorities on what's going on. It's not the everyday paper show that I'm accustomed to.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, say, oh, those people are a little, strange, but...
Oh, I don't think Mr. Friedman's strange at all.
No, I don't either. Stanton's been a good friend of ours a long time. We had a great interview with him this morning. And what I'm saying is, you get out here, you find that if you want to do some demographic research, these people have huge educations, doctorates and masters and... I mean, like Stanton, he's a nuclear physicist.
Well, if you don't believe these people, then you've got to be out of your mind. Oh, no. I mean, fortunately, my husband's purchased every book that's available, so we're going to have some read.
Yeah, well, great. You may have come over here as a novice, but you're going to leave as an expert.
Well, I'll have something to finally talk about. That's intelligent. Instead of, you know, everything that everyone asks me, I love the questions. But, of course, it only pertains to War of the Worlds and what do you think? And then I have to, about what do you think about aliens? What do you think? And I said, well, you know, it's like Carl Sagan. You know, I love that movie, Contact. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just loved it. In the line in the movie that, you know, it's an awful waste of space. If there's nothing else out there,
good point.
It's an awful waste of space.
Were there any hidden messages in War of the Worlds? Why now? Why did it come back out? We hear all these theories.
Well, for the reason of the movie,
In other words, are they was it a government plot to acquaint us that the ETs might be actually
little dangerous? Well, no, actually, this story's been going on now. It's been popular for three centuries.
Oh, that's true.
In 1898, Wells was mad at the British imperialism. So he decided to bring the Martians down to wipe. He said, I'd like to see what would happen to these people who think they're so smart. They've controlled the world. They own everything. And now, well, let's see what they would have to do if they really had a problem. And then in 1938, we have Orson Welles.
Yes, another Welles.
So now we don't have British imperialism. We have Hitler. World War II finishes.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Yes. The timing here.
Exactly. All the metaphors for the Martians. Mm-hmm. Now we have George Pell. We've finished World War II, and now we're worried about the communists. So now with George Pell, we've got the Red Menace. Now poor Steven Spielberg, he has Osama bin Laden. He's got the Al-Qaeda.
Okay.
It's never going to end. This story is going to go on forever. It'll go on. It'll be four centuries before they're finished with it.
Now, when we... talk about the ETs that may have died here and probably did. I think if you took the evidence of Stanton Friedman and Tom Carey and Don Smith and others have come up with, if you were a criminal lawyer, you could probably win a pretty good case circumstantially.
Yes.
I mean, it's fairly obvious extraterrestrials were recovered, the bodies, and one or two were alive for a while. When we get into things like that, that's even stranger than a movie, if you think about it.
Oh, it's just jaw-dropping. It's so exciting.
So have you... What my point is, you were a Hollywood lady, a Hollywood teenager, a Hollywood kid. You've been around the movie business all your life. You come out here. Did you have any preconceptions about Roswell? Did you believe it before you came?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, because years and years ago, I met a woman, Maggie Mahoney, who was, I've lost her name, Sally Field's mother.
Okay.
And we were working on a television show, and for some reason we got on the subject of UFOs, and I'd never really paid any attention or heard of aliens and close encounters 1, 2, and 3. And evidently, she would go out to a place in the desert called Big Rock.
Yeah, and they the giant rock.
Yes,
there.
I had no idea. And so
we were out there last year and did a show, and Roberta Scott, our location producer here, and I jumped in her car, and went out to the big rock and saw it all.
Well, she introduced me to this, and I became fascinated with it. And then years later, I was living in Mexico City. I was married to Matador Jaime Bravo.
A real-life Matador.
A real-life Matador. I have two sons. One son is with me here today, Stefan Adrian.
Well, he's a nice fellow, and
he
takes care of his mother,
out.
I tell you that.
He certainly does. I don't know what I'd do without him.
You can't make it in Hollywood without an assistant. You got one that really cares about you.
I've got an assistant and a manager and a helper and a great gardener. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy, he does everything. But meanwhile, I'm in Mexico and picked up a Look magazine, and it's early 60s before Stefan is born. His other brother's was born in 1958, and I'm reading about Benny Betty and Barney Hill.
And
that reminded me of what Maggie Mahoney had told me about Giant Rock, and I thought, my goodness, this is really interesting, and I wanted to learn more.
And then you get here and you find out Stanton Friedman just wrote a new book.
Lord Almighty, I couldn't. When I met him the first day he walked in, I was so happy I just had to hug him.
Yeah,
it really was an exciting moment.
So you were acquainted with the subject anyway, besides just being cast in War of the Worlds.
Well, that's right. It all came later. The real thinking and the real thought of the whole idea came much, much later.
Let's get back to the movie, War of the Worlds. When you make a movie with special effects like that, actually, a lot of times, what you see on the screen is not what's happening while they're shooting, right?
Oh, God, absolutely. What I'm looking, there's nothing there that I'm looking at. It's just not there.
And when you touched by an alien... were you touched by somebody or?
Well, Charlie Gamora, the chap that built the alien, was a very slight fellow, so it was made to fit his body. The first one was made; it was far too large, so they said, "Go back and finish it because we got to shoot tomorrow." So he and his daughter, she was 12 years old at the time, they worked all night long on making what director Byron Haskin fondly called him Willie Lump Lump. So they worked on Willie all night long and finally got him to fit Charlie Gamora, and it hadn't been cured yet. It was still wet and oozy, and they said, "Oh Lord, if this thing splits when they put it on him, we're gone."
A dead duck.
Oh right, because
it had a lot of money involved in shooting stuff.
Had to be shot that
Always
day.
Been that way, but it's really that way now.
Right. So they slipped it on over him, put him on what is like a skateboard. They called it a dolly, and they pushed him in. And now the arms were entirely too long because they didn't have time to make the arms, to fit the smaller body.
Right.
They still had the great big arms from the previous model. So he fit his, slipped it over him, and his hands would go in up to the elbows, and that's how he could move, like there were little rings there to move the sucker fingers. And then somebody pushed him in carefully and then held his elbow and gently put it on my shoulder. And somebody had to tell me, it's on your shoulder now.
So you weren't kidding when you were soft touch.
I'm a soft touch, really. or Charlie was a soft touch.
Yeah, but you, when you felt it, you
right.
barely felt it.
I barely felt it to have my reaction.
Now, don't you have a website?
Yes, I do. www.annrobinson.com.
And we have a link to that. And if we go
excellent.
Over to that website, we always, when we interview people, we do as much as we can for them because they're nice enough to come on the air.
Oh, so. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely of you.
What are we going
so nice to
find on annrobinson.com?
Pardon me?
What are we going to find on annrobinson.com?
Well, I think you're going to find me. A lot of pictures. You'll find a biography of pictures. And
okay.
It's really rather primitive because we haven't really updated it and made it very sophisticated.
Well,
so I think I'm going to
yeah,
go back with a lot
have
more
to
information.
Yeah, you're update it a little bit because we're going to get people to get over there. Are you still... actively looking for parts in Hollywood? Or
well, I've been offered, several now and then. People are most gracious, but a lot of people aren't connected with the Screen Actors Guild. They're not union. And I, still being a member of the Screen Actors Guild,
I don't blame you.
I can't work in a non-union motion picture.
And there
I'm
seems to be
big
a
trouble.
Huge movement.
Big trouble. So, but I'm just lucky to be invited by gracious people like you and the people at Roswell to come talk, come visit, and say hello.
Okay, what's the situation in, you've been in the movie business all your life. What's the situation in the movies? Is the story still the thing, or have we lost it all to special effects?
I think we've lost it all to special effects. People now are so jaded. They want to, no one has an imagination anymore. I grew up with the radio.
Me too.
You know, and so on Saturday mornings there was a program called Let's Pretend.
I remember that show.
Do you? Oh, I loved it. So, exactly. You'd pretend. I grew up with Les Tremaine, Mr. Fur Snyder.
Yes.
You know, he did over 60.
You would get in the taxi cab and go over to, I think you got on 6th Avenue or someplace and went to the theater district.
Yes, Mr. Fur Snyder.
Yeah, right. And then they
smoking in the outer lobby only.
Yeah.
And you know that when he did that live. And he was in full dress, white tie and tails, top hat and cane.
Did you do some radio?
Did that. Never have done
radio. Never did radio.
I think it'd be fun. I'd love to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I grew up with listening to Les Tremaine's voice.
Right.
And when you grow up on radio, you have an imagination. And now everybody does it for you.
Special
effects do it for you.
I had a very good friend that was a... actor and so far he's gone now a long time, but at one time he did 6 or 7 parts in the same day on radio on network shows.
Oh yes,
back in radio you could do that.
Oh I know. When we were on the set with Les and I used to laugh and say, you know, try to guess what the commercial product was. He was on Helen Trent. He was on Jack Armstrong. He was
Jack Armstrong,
the
All-American
Boy. Sponsor was Wheaties.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't it amazing we can still remember those sponsors?
Oh, my Lord. Langendorf Bread was the, or Weber's Bread, I'm not quite sure, was the Lone Ranger.
Yeah,
Ovaltine was, you know, what are you looking for, darling? Ovaltine was Orphan Annie?
Yeah, and that's true.
Oh.
We may use this part of the show to pitch advertising agencies.
Absolutely. Do you remember I Love a Mystery with Doc, Jack, and Reggie?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I used to sneak my portable radio in. And, of course, in those days, a portable radio, I had four 12-volt batteries.
Yeah.
I could hardly lift it.
Yeah.
That was a portable radio. And from 9:45 to 10 o'clock, I would hear Doc, Jack, and Reggie with that wonderful theme song. Oh, it was so exciting. No, I grew up with imagination and radio, and your question was, pardon me,
how
movies are today. They don't let you think. They do all the thinking for you.
I agree with you completely, but hey, maybe a part will come along. Maybe it'll be an SAG, a SAG job.
I certainly hope so.
And maybe we'll see you again soon.
Oh, I would love it. I mean, I was, look at, Gene Barry and I did a cameo in Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I was Grandmama. I was the one they kept saying, your mother's at Grandmama's house. You don't have to worry now. Poor little Dakota Fanning was scared to death that her mother was dead. And the very end, Gene Barry and I show up and had a lovely cameo, and the movie was over with.
Okay, let's give her a hand, everybody. Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here.
We'll be right back in a moment. This is Jerry Pippen.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduz. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippen Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal questions.